Your Steve Jones Show podcast will start shortly. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Brewers Outlet, your beverage supermarket on Reagan Street in Sunbury. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Happy Friday, everybody. Great to have you with us here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Looking forward to going to Ann Arbor, where tomorrow Penn State will take on Michigan. 3:45 will be the kickoff. 2 o'clock the airtime on News Radio 1070 WKOK and streaming live on WKOK.com. And it'll be interesting tomorrow. Interesting. We're going to talk a lot about that on today's show. And that will include Aaron McMahon from MLive.com. Also joining us today, John Bacon will join us. Also, Dick Girardi on the show today to talk about the Breeders' Cup and college basketball, which gets going, believe it or not, next week. Today's show is brought to you by our great friends at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury. I cannot begin to thank Corey enough for how well he treated my brother when he came in. Corey, that meant a lot to me that you did that. I know you ended up with a candle holder out of it, okay? But still, you know, that he went out of his way. He made my brother feel really special, and that's really cool. Hopefully, my brother's getting out of the hospital this afternoon. As you heard the yesterday show, he was in the hospital this week. And he sounded pretty good, actually, but still. Hopefully, he'll be all right. But Corey, thank you. And today's show is brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Imports, domestics, microbrews, best selection of beer anywhere. Wine coolers, water, soft drinks, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day. The bags are right there at the register. And the pickle bar, yes, indeed. We're even getting emails now that are signed. And the pickle bar is indeed second to none, led by the barrels and the dills. Thanks so much for the great emails. And the fact that they recognize Brewers Outlet in the emails, that's really, really cool. Today's show is, of course, also in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We made the turn into November. It's a great time of the year to buy a car. They are the best people to deal with, always. Our good friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. So we're going to get rolling. We had a lot of people yesterday. We played in the 4 o'clock half hour. We had on the show Roman Stubbs of the Washington Post. There's some people earlier in the show that did not get a chance to hear him. So we're going to talk with him. There have obviously been even more movement overnight with James Brady, the head of the Board of Regents in the Maryland system, stepping down. So we'll talk with Roman Stubbs in a few moments. And then after that, we got Aaron Morrison coming up. MLive.com, John Bacon, and then Dick Girardi as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Party time, game time, or just fun time. Doesn't matter what time it is, because it's Brewers Outlet time. The Beverage Supermarket has the area's largest beer selection. Imports, microbrews, ciders, and domestics. Pick from over 100 ice-cold 12-packs and dozens of 24-ounce singles. Soda, snacks, hot sauces, fresh roasted peanuts. Make it one-stop party shopping, and don't forget the pickle bar. So whatever you're celebrating or just doing it up, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury, wants to see you. And thank you for your years of patronage.
Welcome back on this Friday. Penn State, Michigan tomorrow, 3:45 the kick, and 2 o'clock the airtime at News Radio 1070 WKOK and streaming live on WKOK.com. Don't forget Eagle 107 at Sealands Grove's playoff game with Midwest tonight at 7, 6 o'clock the airtime at Eagle 107. And Bucknell is back on the air tomorrow on Eagle 107 as they play at Lehigh. And Doug and Kevin will have that show, game for you tomorrow as well. Today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. And we're in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. A lot has been going on, obviously, at Maryland. The tragedy, the death of offensive tackle Jordan McNair, who collapsed on May 29th and passed away 2 weeks later in mid-June. Since then, they've had an investigation, a couple of investigations. DJ Durkin, the head coach, was put on paid administrative leave. The Board of Regents came back with a report saying that he should retain his job, that the athletic director would retain his job. Wallace Lowe, the president, announced that he would be stepping down at the end of the fiscal year, June 30th next year. And then 24 hours after that, DJ Durkin was fired. And 24 hours after that, James Brady, the head of the Board of Regents at Maryland, stepped down. Roman Stubbs joined us earlier in the week. We had a chance to talk with him. In fact, he joined us yesterday, and we revisit with him from the Washington Post. Roman, welcome.
Hey, Steve. How are you?
I'm doing well. Sorry it has to be under the circumstances. We'd rather just talk about sports. But that's not the case here. Let's go in two parts. How surprised were you that DJ Durkin was reinstated? Then how surprised were you that the reinstatement lasted 24 hours?
Well, I think everybody was stunned on Tuesday night when he was reinstated. We had heard for so long that there just was no feasible and realistic chance that DJ Durkin could come back and coach again in the wake of Jordan McNair's death, wake of all those allegations of abuse into the program. It just was, after reading the report and seeing all the damning details, it just was so remarkable that the board decided to try to bring him back. I think ultimately they really underestimated what the public response was going to be. I think on that end, it wasn't surprising that they had to do a reversal yet last night. Maybe in the manner in which they did it, how quickly they did it, that was the surprising part. But it didn't seem like it was going to be able to work. You know, when he came back onto campus on Tuesday night, it just was so stunning to see him walking around, and you just wondered, how is the kids going to respond? How are the staff going to respond? How is he going to be able to recruit? So many questions. And on that end, I don't think it was surprising that this was the decision.
All right, so now let's get to the part about the credibility in front of your team. What do you know about the team meeting he had with them, and what do you know about Tuesday's practice where there's an alleged incident between a pro-Durkin player and an anti-Durkin player?
Yeah, well, we know that several players walked out of that meeting that he had with the team. I was told that it was an awkward meeting, that so many assistants were upset by the decision. This has been actually a pretty remarkable season for Maryland. They have 5 wins. We consider all of the distractions, all of the controversy. To be on the cusp of bowl eligibility is really impressive. This is a team that has really, I think, been galvanized and come together to play for each other. They bought into Matt Canada, who's more laid back, who's won over that locker room. So when Durkin came back, yeah, he didn't say a lot, apparently, at practice on Tuesday night. He kind of was just an observer. Players came up and greeted him, but for the most part, it kind of spoke to just how fractured that locker room was. It was just bizarre seeing him walk out of practice afterwards. You know, you had security personnel trying to block reporters from asking questions after the board had promised more transparency. It was a stunning scene. It didn't seem like it was realistic that it was going to be able to work. And obviously that led to the decision last night.
How does it work at Maryland? Was the president the only one that could actually fire him? The board could not fire him. Is that accurate or not?
Right. So, yeah, the Board of Regents only had the power to act on President Wallace Lowe. Wallace Lowe would then have the power to fire or retain DJ Durkin and Damon Evans. And I think it just speaks to how political this whole thing was, all these agendas. The bottom line is the Board of Regents recommended that Lowe keep DJ Durkin. Lowe came back and acted alone last night and fired him. You know, that it just shows how politically charged this thing has been. It's quite remarkable and quite stunning for sure.
All right. Lowe is going to step down June 30th of next year at the end of the fiscal year. Knowing that he had that in his back pocket, did it make him, in your opinion, more empowered to make a decision like this?
Well, we've been told and we've reported that Lowe had been strong-armed by the Regents, that their number one priority was bringing back DJ Durkin. They told him that if he wanted to retain his post, that he had to bring back Durkin. So Lowe was basically handcuffed when he met with the Regents earlier this week, and he made the decision to endorse that call by the Regents. Bottom line is that you know, when he got up there and spoke on Monday night, he did not reference DJ Durkin. You could tell that there was friction there. You could tell that this wasn't the decision that he had preferred. He was backed into a position where he had to announce his own retirement. It's going to be really fascinating to see what happens with Wallace Lowe, whether the Regents will act on him now. But we're going to see a kind of a souped-up political situation for sure in the coming days.
All right. What has allowed Matt Canada to do the job he's done? Now, remember, I want everyone to remember that last year Maryland opened the season at Texas, put together a great offensive show because they had their quarterback, not just quarterback, but quarterbacks in the top two spot. What has having them back meant, but what has also Matt Canada's touch with this team meant?
Yeah, I think it just speaks to we've heard a lot about his personality. You know, Durkin had a very specific way of doing things. He had these notoriously long meetings, long days, brutal, kind of just brutal days in the building. Canada's kind of taken a different approach. They're out of there by early evening. That doesn't mean they don't work hard, but he kind of has a more laid-back approach. He's a likable guy. He is a creative offensive mind. They've had their struggles, but he's been able to, you know, take the talent that DJ Durkin assembled and be able to win with it. But moreover, I think that he's really brought the team together and really kind of galvanized this team behind the message that they're playing for each other now. I think a lot of the consensus has been that in this whole saga that not only is the death of Jordan McNair been forgotten, but also the kids have been forgotten, the coaches have been forgotten. It's become all about the politics of the situation, and I think he's really used that to his advantage and preached that these kids have to stay together and they have to be a tight-knit group. And I think they've played like that. They play hard. They're physical. They're they're a team that's been able to put up good numbers, and you know, they're one win away from bowl eligibility. So it's been interesting for sure.
Roman, in your opinion, is now Matt Canada auditioning for the job full time, or do you sense that they're going to go completely outside and start over?
You know, that's incredibly difficult to gauge right now. You know, less than 24 hours after Durkin was gone. But, you know, I get the sense that you know, he is the kind of guy that could lead this program. I don't know if he's auditioning right now. You know, we'll have to see what happens with the power structure. Obviously, if something else happens with the president and the athletic director, this could be a whole new clean slate that's brought in, and they could decide to just clean house entirely. But I think he's a viable candidate, in my opinion. I think he's a guy who would do things differently than Durkin, and you know, I think his players believe in him. So I think he'd certainly have a case if he'd want to stay here, for sure.
All right, Roman, the game with Michigan State coming up, in some ways, does this team need to play the game because of the sense of normalcy of playing a game?
Yeah, I think you could say that. I think we saw that in the season opener against Texas, you know, that you know, being able to use that game, the game, as a distraction almost. But the end of the day, football is just football, and I
right.
think people are realizing that this thing has been so sad and it's so politicized that, I think at the end of the day, we're forgetting, you know, a lot of people have forgotten about the kids, about the coaches, about the people who are actually in the program. And, I'm sure they'll be fired up to play on Saturday.
Yeah. Because my point about the question is this, you know, it's tough for anybody to answer all the questions that are thrown at them about the death of a teammate, the death of a friend, a guy that's in their locker room. You know, nobody knows about the coach, but they're trying to do this under the guise of being 18 to 23 year olds as well, which I think makes it even more difficult. How well have the players actually handled this? Because as you said, there have been times where they've been shoved to the back of the line.
Yeah, I think they've handled it really well. You know, I think, there's been some fractures. Obviously, there's been people who have supported Durkin. There's been people who have come out against Durkin. But all is told, you know, I think this season could have really went south quickly on them. You know, we haven't seen a lot of departures in terms of transfers. We haven't seen recruits leave. You know, we haven't seen that much turmoil in terms of the inner workings of the team. So on that end, I think the kids have responded really well. And I would say it was impressive last night to see so many kids speak up against, speak out against the decision against Durkin, for Durkin. I don't think it's the consensus, but I think a lot of kids had the courage to say, you know, that he needed to be held accountable, and that what the regions wouldn't do, they wanted to speak out against. And you know, I think that speaks to the character of some of the kids on the team. And you know, it's been, like I said, pretty interesting to watch play out.
Finally, Roman, how precarious is Maryland's position within the state right now with, you know, with recruiting and things like that? I mean, there are far more important things, right? So I know that. But we're, you know, at some point, though, you do have to ask some football questions because they have to. This is day one of moving forward from what's been going on. Where do they stand with people? How, you know, in terms of the ability to go into a living room and say, "Hey, look, this is the place you ought to go, and this is why."
Yeah, well, you know, basically the recruiting operations have been very silent over the last 2 months. I think they have 10 kids committed in their class. You know, we're 2 months out from signing day. That was one of the big questions with Durkin coming back, is how is he ever going to be able to go into a living room and look apparently the eye again and be able to tell them that he's going to take care of their son. That made it all the more baffling that the Board of Regents had made the decision that they did. But at the end of the day, I think, that's going to be a really big question for, the next coaching staff. I think a lot of just talking to high school coaches around here in this area, you know, that there's a lot of uncertainty with them telling their kids they should go to Maryland because they don't know who the coach is going to be. So, right. Like I said, there's a lot of uncertainty. There's obviously the factor of negative recruiting. Schools will use this against Maryland. And so they're going to have to buckle up and be prepared for a long rebuilding process. And I guess it starts today.
Next time we talk, by the way, will probably be the week of the Maryland game. We'll talk just football, okay?
Okay.
that's where I know I'm more comfortable.
Yeah.
Roman, thanks
for having me.
Oh, thank you for taking all the time you did with us. We appreciate it so much.
Yep, have a good day.
Roman Stubbs, Washington Post. Coming up, we'll talk with John Bacon about tomorrow's Penn State-Michigan matchup. He'll come up in the next half hour. Today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury. We're in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. Today's show brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Imports, domestics, microbrews. This is the best selection anywhere. Wine coolers, water, soft drinks, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day. The bags are right there at the register. And the pickle bar, led by the barrels of the dills, indeed, second to none. We are, as far as I'm concerned, we've made the turn into November. As far as I'm concerned, we are now officially into the holiday season, okay? You got Thanksgiving, you've got Hanukkah, you got Christmas, you've got New Year's Day. This is a fun, fun, fun time of the year. So, it'd be great to make this holiday season even better by buying a car from Sunbury Motors and make sure you're fully stocked all the time, whether you're going someplace or you have company, from Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. In a moment, John Bacon. This day in sports history, 1938. It was announced that Babe Ruth had applied for the job as the manager of the St. Louis Browns after being released as a coach from the Brooklyn Dodgers. Babe Ruth badly wanted to manage. When he signed with the Boston Braves and played the first half of the, 35 season, something like that, 36 season, he thought he was going to be the manager when it was all said and done. Thought he had a verbal agreement to do that. Then with the Dodgers, he was a first base coach, but he wanted to be the manager. And then he kept applying around for managerial jobs. He never got one. It was one of the great frustrations of his life. CBS purchased the Yankees in 1964 for $11.2 million. Eventually, George Steinbrenner bought the Yankees from CBS. Let's see. And also on this date, NBA.com TV was launched. Important because that was the one that got the individual sports networks rolling to challenge ESPN. All right. My good friend, good friend, John Bacon joins us. Author, covered Michigan for decades, Bo Schembechler's biographer. John, my good friend, welcome back to the show.
Steve, it is always a pleasure, my good friend, and the Happy Valley.
Yes. All right. So let's get to this current team right here. Now, did the loss to Notre Dame, which of course brought with it all the negative publicity, which then was coupled with negative publicity from other times, did that allow this team and allow its coaching staff to kind of go under the radar and just get better?
I think that's a great insight and a great way to look at it. In some ways, it did them a lot of good in hindsight, the Wolverines, of course, that if they win that game, all of a sudden you're a top 10 team, and frankly, they would not have been a real top 10 team. It would have been overrated, and expectations would have been too high. They had to go back to square one and relearn some stuff, including offensive line play. So, in a real sense, getting off the national radar in that first game was a blessing in hindsight, which I'm sure nobody would have believed at the time.
You talked about the offensive line. Karon Higdon has six 100-yard rushing games. How well does he work with that line and those two tight ends?
Extremely well, and I'd say that's another good insight because it's not enough to be a talented back. You have to figure out what kind of line you have, what kind of line you don't have. Karon is a north-south runner. He's not dancing the backfield. He's not trying to cut back and pull a Barry Sanders. If he, whatever hole the O-line gives him, he takes it and gets to the linebackers as fast as he can. And that's why he's almost always chipping out 3 or 4 yards per run. And, of course, oftentimes much more than that on the big breakers. But he takes what they give him, which is not a dominant O-line, but it's become a good one, sometimes a very good one, and that's a whole lot better than they were 8 games ago.
Has Shea Patterson's mobility made them a better offensive line?
That has also been essential, Steve, that, again, with what was a horrible O-line the last couple of years, last year certainly, has become a serviceable one. But that does not mean you get 8 seconds in the pocket.
Yeah.
Trace McSorley's got an advantage there, I think, over Shea. So Shea has been the right quarterback for this team the same way that Higdon has been, and that is recognizing pretty quickly with eyes in the back of his head when the pocket is collapsing and when to scoot almost always to the right and try to find somebody downfield. The catch to that, Steve, is the receivers are not used to that and they've had to learn how to come back to the ball after a broken play, which is often.
Right. And again, there's so much of football, and I've mentioned this several times this year. But look, every sport has aspects of playground to it. Every one of them does. Mm-hmm. You know, you can structure all the plays you want, but to me, the great players are the ones that in the ad-lib moments know exactly what to do with it.
That's a key point there. This team is learning that. They're probably about halfway there, which is why I think overall, I think they're number five in part because who else is in front of them? I don't think there's a dominant team, not now.
Right.
But I think they're a now very good team. They believe in each other. They don't make dumb mistakes. They take very few penalties, very few turnovers. So in that sense, with a combine that with a crushing defense, and you've got a very competitive team, which is why I think this game this weekend is going to be one hell of a dogfight.
Yeah. To me, when I look at a great defense, I normally see teams, John, that have at least one great player at each level of it. And even with Gary out, they still have, to me, that great player at that level in Winovich. Bush, obviously. And then pick one in the secondary from Hill to Metellus to whatever. They've got a great player at every level. How well do they work together, and how important are those corners so Don Brown can unleash the hounds?
That is how Don Brown has done it, and even without Gary the last three games, they don't seem to have missed a beat against both Wisconsin and Michigan State, two-ranked teams. So the defense is truly great, in my opinion. They're number one in the nation right now. The offense, as I said, is good to very good on a given day, but it's the defense that is fueling this team. And right now, man, these guys are damn near interchangeable parts. They're deep two and three at most positions. They've got a lot of good players, a couple of great players like Winovich, but I don't know if you can point to anybody on this team is going to win a postseason award,
right?
You know, Outland or whatever. Whereas even 2 years ago, they had three or four of those guys in that category. A few nominees. So I think it's a lot of very good players who are working extraordinarily well together. And the way Don Brown's defense is set up, you have to, because despite the reputation of being a blitz all the time team, he does blitz a lot. They don't play as much man as commonly believed, and you'll often have on your wideouts double coverage. Watch for that
right.
This weekend.
Right.
So to pull that off, you better know what the other guy's doing. And that's your point, that these guys work extraordinarily well together.
They also walk on the field with a lot of field behind them. In fact, this season only twice has the Michigan defense walked out on the plus side of the field, which then brings
really?
Up...
Really? I didn't know that. Good work.
This is what I do.
That's what you do. This is what I'm supposed to do, Steve.
No. When it happens, I'm supposed to talk about it when it happens, and, you know. So that way I'm prepared for it. But they've only walked out twice on the plus side of the field, which then brings up a guy you probably don't talk that much about, but that's Will Hart. What is his ability, what has he done to allow Jim to play the chess game with his defense?
You're the first guy, by the way, most weeks, the opposing team, and whoever Michigan's playing that week, I'll get a call. And, of course, I sought you out this time because I just missed talking to you, my buddy. But I've got to tell you that I have not gotten a single question about Will Hart in 8 weeks. And if there's one unsung hero for this team, you picked him. He's given them great field position every time. He's not had a single bad punt all year, so watch that happen this weekend. And when they're in close, when they're on the 45, 40-yard line, and you can debate the merits of punting at that level, that part of the field, he's resurrected the lost art of the coffin corner kick, which you don't see very often these days. And so he's given them great field position on a team that plays it almost old school, a la Paterno and Schembechler, where you grind out yards on the ground, you play good defense. That's a field position team. And each time he punts it, they gained 10 or 20 yards going the other way. So he has been the unsung hero of this team, I think, in a field position game, which I bet Saturday's is going to be.
28 punts this year, 16 have been 50 yards or better. It's remarkable numbers for one guy. You brought up Paterno Schembechler, which I'm glad you did because I wanted to go to this anyway. There was an event in 1990, and I believe it was a roast for Bo. And Joe went to the event. And, everybody's having fun at Bo's expense, But Joe gets serious at the end, and he said, look, he said, there are two coaches, This is 1990. There are two coaches to him that he felt rose above in his eyes, Bear Bryant and Bo Schembechler. And he said that in a time where there aren't a lot of heroes, sports can make heroes or maybe make people greater than maybe they really are in the eyes of others. And he said Bo Schembechler had that ability to take good players, make them great, take great players, and make them stars. How important is it that we never forget things like that and that we don't forget about the Bo Schembechlers of the world that set Big Ten football? Because you had a great relationship with him. He trusted you. So, I mean, what does something like that mean when you hear that?
It means everything to anybody who cares about college football, especially, of course, given the source. If he's going to put Bo and Bear in that category, obviously Paterno would be the third member of that trio, a no-brainer in my view. I recall Coach Pavlik, one of your volleyball coaches, telling me a great line when I was spending time in State College. He says he thinks of Penn State as a place of ordinary people doing extraordinary things. And I think if you look at Paterno's teams, yeah, he had some great recruits, and Pennsylvania and Ohio are great places to recruit. But how many guys developed under his watch and would become All-Americans in their senior year and so on? And that's most of them, I think. So that's how they did in the old school. You hit upon one reason why I so much prefer college football to the pros. The pros, everyone does it about the same way. You draft more or less the same players. You got more or less the same systems. I don't know how much coaching really goes on at that level. Certainly not much developing. Either you can play the game by then or you can't.
Right.
There's not much patience with it. Whereas if you're Bo or Paterno or Bear, I don't care how sharp an 18-year-old you are in your high school. Bo gave me a great line about this one. He said, okay, that's great. You're Detroit Catholic Center last year and you beat Brother Rice. That's wonderful. They're not on our schedule this year. So, we're going to find out what you can do versus Penn State and Ohio State, and you'll find it a very different game. How many times do you guess wrong on five stars and to some two-star walk-on? Hell. Look at the kid from Scranton, of course, not too long ago. The 2012 team.
Matt McGloin.
Matt McGloin, and how many times these guys end up being, hell, the guy was starting for the Raiders for a while.
Right.
These guys get developed in the process. That, to me, is so interesting about college football, how individual players and a team will improve throughout the year if they're well coached. You don't see that in the NFL. The Patriots don't get much better during the season. They are who they are. Whereas the Nittany Lions, and I got to give Franklin credit here. I can't claim to be as big a fan of his as I was of O'Brien's or Paterno's, but I recall almost exactly 2 years ago, Michigan shellacking Penn State here in Ann Arbor. And then, of course, what do? Instead of folding the tent, they win 9 straight games in the Big Ten title. I would not have taken that bet, Steve.
Go ahead. I remember talking to you after the game, and that's about what you said. I mean, and then you got a hold of me later in the year, and they said, hey, you got something.
How's that crow?
Yeah.
Serve it up.
No. You know me. I would never do that to you.
Yeah, but I'll eat it.
Yeah, and I would never do that to you. But I think that's what has made a lot of this over the years special, is that we've been able to be around people like that. What did it take for you, though, to get Bo's trust to sit down and open up about a few things when you're writing a book about him?
Good question. Of course, only Bo could really answer that question. I can say that Bo, and I think Paterno did a similar thing, and this is why you earned his trust. Bo would tell you a lot of things off the record and then watch to see if you printed them.
Right. No, that's exactly right. You're actually not that far off, because I think the ability of them to float something at you and then find out later it never went any further means millions to them.
Exactly. Look, trust is their biggest currency, because there are plenty of people who would have killed to write that last book with Bo, as I'm sure signed up for Paterno's book, of course. I know Joe Posnanski ultimately did the biggest one, I think.
Yeah.
Look, they don't need the money. They'd rather be less famous than they are, I think, in both cases. So why are they going to do a book? And the answer is they want to get it down and get it down right. That's a question of trust.
Right.
And on that front, I got to tell you flat out, I just got flat out lucky. They both liked me, trusted me. I think being an Ann Arbor kid was part of it. We had some mutual friends and people like that. But really, I was just pretty damn lucky. And I will never enjoy writing a book more than I enjoyed writing that book.
What's the next venture for you going to be?
Good question. I'm starting that one out right now. Starting the Big Ten is heating up as a topic. You mentioned Maryland before we got on. Holy smokes. And I know DJ Durkin and I like him, but it is what it is. I mean, you lost a player. I cannot. You might know something about trustees. I've seen it at Michigan. You've seen it too. So there's that one. So if this Michigan team keeps on winning, there might be a book in that, of course. I've also got some other topics I'm pursuing outside of sports, which have been fun as well. My last book was The Great Halifax Explosion, which most Americans don't know about it, but it became a bestseller 100 years ago, the biggest man-made explosion until the A-bomb, and how U.S. and Canada became allies from that. And the same year, I wrote a book with John Saunders, whom I know you knew.
Right, and I had you on the show about that book.
Exactly, and you did a great job with that, Playing Hurt, My Journey from Despair to Hope. So that allows me to branch out a bit more, but Steve, if I had one more Michigan football book in me, this might be the year. We'll see. I tell you what, ask me on Sunday, because I'll know a lot more.
Well, exactly. And which I want to ask you, I talked about the Beau part. Now I want to ask you about the Harbaugh part. How difficult is it to know Jim?
It depends. It's a good and fair question, but it really depends. I happen to know Jim since third grade. We're the same age, and we both grew up here in town. And I found some old program. We're on a hockey all-star team together in 1974 in fourth grade. I did not know that.
Okay.
So we were teammates in eighth grade. I played baseball against him. So one of us, Steve, was a great athlete, is all I'll tell you. You got to buy the book to find out.
There's a mystery ending here. I don't know about
it's a real nail-biter, trust me.
Oh, my goodness.
So I think that has helped me, certainly, with a lot of mutual friends. And he does not always like what I've written, but none of it's been unfair, and off-record is off-the-record and all that, so... He has been able to trust me, I think. How do you know him? I'll tell you what works in a press conference and what doesn't, and you'll be smart about this on Saturday. I'm sure I'll see you. And that is, if you ask him a question about himself, you're going to get a very short answer, and he will not grin. If you ask about his coaches or his players, he'll go on for 5 minutes. So how you don't get to know Jim is asking questions about himself, and how you do get to know Jim is ask him about anything else.
Fair. That's fair. I mean, and believe me, around here, there are certain questions, Look, the bottom line is this. I always enjoy I ask the tough questions. And I always ask the same question. Did you get an answer? To me, good questions get answers.
That's a good point. And not the closed-ended ones, of course. If they can answer with yes or no, it's not usually a great question. And here's another example, by the way. And I've seen you work at Penn State mainly, of course, but I've seen you elsewhere around the Big Ten. Another rule of thumb is this. If I can answer the question for the coach, that's not a good answer. That's not a good question.
Right. No, exactly.
If you ask the coach after a game, how'd you feel about this great play? I felt very good about it.
Yeah. I'm happy.
Exactly. Thank you. Next one. I am less happy about the fumble.
Were you upset about the fumble? What do you think?
No, I was thrilled.
You know what? I felt it made us better.
Lucky break. If you can give me that answer, Steve, then that was a good question. Otherwise, maybe not.
No, probably not. No. John, always a pleasure. I really look forward to seeing you on Saturday, my friend. We don't catch up often enough.
It's always a pleasure. I look forward to that as well. I look forward to, I'm sure, what will be another great game and a long series of great games between these two teams.
Yeah, that should be. I think it'll be a fun game on Saturday.
And by the way, I got to tell you also, Michigan fans love Penn State fans. I won't tell you who they don't love, but they love Penn State fans.
I think they can guess.
It might be the same answer. I don't know.
One might be to the west for one, might be to the south for another. Okay.
Hard to say.
John, thanks so much. I'll talk to you Saturday.
Sounds great, Steve. Always a pleasure.
John Bacon, covered Michigan for a long time. Bo Schembechler's biographer, also wrote the book that included Penn State after everything happened in 2012, Fourth Down, and that's outstanding. And he's written a lot of other books as well. It'll be great to catch up tomorrow with John in the press box for a while. Today's show brought to you by our good friends at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. And we're in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Aaron Morrison from MY.com next on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Okay.